Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we visit with Melinda Myers. She's a nationally known gardening expert. She's been with us many times on the program. She's a TV and radio host. She's an author, a columnist, over 30 years of experience in horticulture. And she's written over 20 gardening books and has received some great reviews for her released second edition of Midwest Gardener's Handbook, All You Need to Know to Plan, and Maintain a Midwest Garden. So we'll talk with her about how to propagate plants to begin with, and of course we'll take your garden questions as well, indoors or out, I guess. Join the conversation. The number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Melinda Myers, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always great to chat with you and your listeners, Larry.
Well, we'll start by talking about propagating houseplants. It's kind of a cool thing to do, and there are quite a few ways that you can propagate houseplants, but there are probably some that are better and more foolproof than others. What do you think?
You bet. And the way you're laughing, I'm guessing maybe you've had some success and maybe not so much. We've all had those failures as gardeners. That's part of learning, right?
Absolutely.
And one thing I always like to do, a little disclaimer, is remember that all these new introductions that are being made, breeders have spent a lot of time and money developing them, and if they're patented, we really shouldn't be propagating those. But there's plenty of older varieties, heirloom plants, things that you've passed down from one generation to the next. So there's plenty of things to start new plants for yourself or to share. And so probably the one most people know, and, you know, growing up, my grandma had a little kind of this really cute ceramic thing that she always had cuttings rooting in water.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people do that and have great success. The roots that form are a little bit different, more elongated, thinner than those roots that form when you root a cutting in, say, vermiculite or potting mix. So you could skip the step. I like to just root my things right away in vermiculite or potting mix so that I get the roots the plant needs. I shorten the time. And for many people, it increases their success. So leaf stem cutting, probably the most common and easiest. And one of the big mistakes I see is people taking big, long cuttings, thinking, well, I'm going to start with a 12-inch piece of the plant, so I have a big plant. But that's a lot of leaves that lose the moisture. So a 3 or 4 inch cutting, remove the lowest leaf, and then just stick that cutting, that cut end, in vermiculite. If you tend to be an underwater or a potting mix, that's what I use. You know, vermiculite drains well. So if you tend to overwater, stick it in vermiculite. If you're like me and you're an underwater, stick it in potting mix. It holds the moisture better. And then I just loosely cover it with a plastic bag. So I set the pot in a plastic bag. Don't close it. It increases the humidity. Put it in a bright location, out of direct sunlight. In a couple of weeks, you'll have a rooted cutting. And if you start it in potting mix, you're set to keep it growing. Or else if it's in vermiculite, just repot it as needed. That's probably the easiest way that can be used where so many different plants, pothos, philodendrons, those are easy ones to propagate. If your plant cuttings tend to rot or don't root effectively, rooting hormone's another option. So you dip that cut end in some rooting powder, hormone powder that has fungicides to prevent rot or reduce the risk, and then also hormones to promote rooting. And so that can help. You know, if you're having failures or you've got some plants that are a little challenging, that's a great way to do it. So that's probably the easiest and most common way to start plants.
Are there some that are just so darn hard to do?
That just give it up and just buy a new plant? Yes. And one that I always, you know, coleus is always said to be very easy to propagate. And I find I take twice as many cuttings as I want to root because, I don't know, for me that's one that I sometimes am challenged with. And I usually use rooting hormone to increase my success with that one. Cacti and succulents can be a little challenging because you need to, what's called, suberize or callus over the cut end. So you may be growing, say, a jade plant and a leaf drops and it starts a new plant on its own, nothing you did other than not clean it up. But sometimes when we take that leaf stem cutting, we need to let that suberize or callus over for a day or two so the cut end won't rot. And some people do have trouble with getting cacti and succulents to root because of that. You don't want them to totally dry out and, you know, desiccate, but you also can't overdo the water because then they'll rot. And I always say, you know, especially, and if it's an heirloom plant, right, something that's been passed down in the family, I don't know about you, but if there's some reason to hang on to it, a special meaning, those are always the ones that are harder to grow and harder to propagate, all that responsibility. The other one you could do is a leaf cutting, and if you have like a Rex begonia, you know, you really got that big flat leaf. This one's a little tricky, so this is not one for people who like 100% success. This is something that you do, and when you're successful, you brag about it, and if it doesn't work, nobody has to know. And you take that leaf, remove it from the plant, slice through those big, thick stems, put that leaf on the soil surface in a pot with moist potting mix. You'll need to anchor it with like a florist pin or some other way to keep the leaf in contact with the soil. And everywhere you slit through that vein has the potential to start a new plant. And so that's kind of a cool thing because from one leaf you can get several plants. I've had some success, and I've had probably more failures than success with this method. But, you know, it's part of the fun of gardening, right? Not giving up. So that's another thing. African violets are another fun one to propagate by a leaf cutting. But this is done a little different. You take the leaf, but you leave the leaf stem, the petiole, intact. And then you just bury that leaf stem in the moist potting mix. And you have to wait like 2 months, 1 to 2 months. I know. So this is not for people who want quick results. I think I've lost a few of your listeners already. Forget that one. And you'll get a new plant forming. And so that's kind of another cool thing to do. And you can do something similar with snake plants. Chop up the leaves, those long strappy leaves, into 2-inch sections. Make sure the end that was closest to the roots is what gets buried. Stick them into moist potting mix or a peat moss vermiculite mix, and again, it'll shoot up new plants. The cool thing is, from a genetic standpoint, if you do that with a variegated snake plant, it'll come out solid green with just the normal pattern, no variegation, because the genetic material that tells it to be variegated is in the rhizome, not in the leaf.
Oh.
So it's kind of, yeah, so... You know, plants are just amazing, you know, when you think about it. And fun to do with kids because, you know, here you're starting a new plant from part of an old one and lots of fun lessons. And we're gardeners, so we like to do that no matter how old we are, right?
Absolutely. You know, back to begonias for a minute. Audrey emailed, she saved a potted angel wing begonia.
Oh.
And wonders about propagating it. How would she do it with the angel wing?
You know, and angel wings are wonderful. I love bringing them in for winter, the dragon wing, the angel wing, because they really adapt well to the inside. That would be a great one to do a leaf stem cutting, would probably be the easiest. She could also try a leaf cutting as well if she wants to, you know, do a leaf stem cutting for greatest success. And then if you do the leaf cutting, you know, that's kind of, if it works, you'll have an extra few plants. But a leaf stem cutting would be a great way because those have nice cane stems and the leaves coming off of them. And I think I forgot to mention, we typically, after we make our cut, remove the lowest leaf because that's where, that node is where those roots will form. So like a 3 or 4 inch cutting, take off the lowest leaf and then bury that portion. And usually only takes a couple weeks. I find begonias pretty easy. The leaf stem cutting's pretty easy to do.
Different question. Tammy emailed to ask how to start Dutchman's pipe vine from winterized seed pods. They've tried,
ooh,
they soaked them in warm water, let the viable ones kind of soak in warm water for a couple of days, 48 hours, and then planted them in warm soil, half inch deep, covered, and kept warm. And they read it takes 2 to 8 weeks to start, but I guess it's been more than that, and there aren't any sprouts.
It sounds like she's collected. I'd be honest, I have not propagated these myself. I'm guessing it sounds like she collected them from her plant. So first of all, making sure that it sounds like she checked that they are mature and viable. So she made sure she soaked them. It sounds like she did her research, and some plants can be a little tricky needing a cold period, stratification, needing some cold, and then some need a cold, warm, cold. One of the things I've learned is patience really pays off. She might want to dig down and make sure there are still intact seeds there. If she's got several she started, just to see if they're rotted, if they're doing anything. I wouldn't give up just yet, but I would definitely look and see what's going on underneath with at least one or two of those seeds.
Sonia, and by the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org, just like Sonia in Duluth did. She emailed. She has a lemon tree for a little over a year. Her named her tree Lemmy. It's been doing well.
Inspired her.
Last summer, she had it out on the deck, and it grew many leaves. When she brought it in, it lost half its leaves, mostly on the bottom of the tree, but now seems to be stable. Is this normal, and how often should she be feeding it? And are there any other tips for keeping a lemon tree alive and, better yet, growing lemons?
Okay. So anytime you want to jump in as the successful citrus grower, please feel free. I've had some good success with some limes. I always seem to get scale on my citrus plants, so I'm taking a break for a few years. A couple things. Feeding in the winter, usually we're just trying to keep the plants alive. So unless they're actively growing, best not to really fertilize until our days get longer, the light intensity improves, and then you can start fertilizing and using either a balanced fertilizer or one that promotes flowering and fruiting. And then following directions, I tend to be a dilute solution kind of fertilizer because you can always add more. You can't take it away. Good bright light is really critical and sometimes hard. Do you have yours in just a sunny window, your lemon tree?
South-facing window in winter, and Limey sits out on the deck on the upper, the second floor deck in the summertime, and then would come in the winter on a south-facing window. I actually fertilize it every time.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I use a fish emulsion fertilizer.
Oh. So you're using an organic, very low nutrient.
Right.
So that's a great point, Larry. So if you're using something like that, that's releasing small amounts of nutrients over a longer period of time. And so you're not going to risk damaging those tender roots. I'm glad you brought that up. Where if you're using a traditional houseplant fertilizer that's more quick release with higher levels of nutrients, definitely think about either greatly diluting it or waiting till March to start fertilizing. And let your plant be the guide. It sounds like you have a great spot, and your plant's pretty mature. So obviously you've got a good spot for winterizing it. Leaf drop is very normal when you bring plants in from outside, and it takes them a while to adjust. They actually, the cells in the leaves change from being the way they're arranged so they can receive more light in lower light conditions. And then when they're outside, they're arranged in a way to block some of that excess light. So that's why we see many of the lights drop, because they're not allowing enough light for photosynthesis and adjusting to the new climate. So any other advice? I'm going to,
I use a pole lamp.
Okay.
For lighting. So you've got three different kind of levels where the light's hitting, Limey.
Well, and that's really important. As your plants get larger, a lot of the new, there's a lot of big agriculture happening in warehouses and things like that. And one of the things they're doing is trying to do exactly what you're doing. The bigger the plants, you need to get light from all different levels. So even though it's in that beautiful sunny window, you're supplementing, and that's really important with citrus. They like good, bright light, and so that probably reduces your leaf drop when you bring them inside and keeps them going well.
It does indeed, and Limey would flower voraciously once brought inside.
Excellent. Excellent. So are you enjoying any limes in your favorite beverage?
Well, that's been known to happen. Limey's had up to 30 limes.
Wow.
It was a very good plant. Let's put it that way. Bob in Sun Prairie has something for us. Let's go there.
Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi, Bob. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a yard full of hostas, and in the fall, I cut them back, and there's a stem that comes out of the center of them with these seeds that are kind of laddered back and forth, and there's a lot of them. And so this year I saved those seeds and just set them in an open tray to dry. And I'm wondering about, can I just plant those, or do they need to be started in a pot indoors first, or...
Yeah, and I'm telling you, honestly, I'm cheating here a little bit to check about seeing. One of the things I like to do is if a plant is native to areas where it's cold and they typically set seed, hostas tend to bloom in the summer, so there are some fall bloomers to get them to germinate. So I always like to say if it's a tropical plant, like a citrus, you probably don't need a cold treatment. If it's something that's from a cold climate, sometimes you do. Hostas don't need that cold treatment, so you can start them. I would probably start them indoors just to increase your success, or set aside an area outside after the danger of frost to start them. But by starting them indoors, you can have a small transplant. You know, they won't come true from seed if it's a hybrid, which I'm guessing it is. But that's often how they introduce new varieties on the market as well. And so you can just plant them up. You might want to wait till you get closer to the garden season. You know, give it at least maybe 8 to 12 weeks before you're going to plant them outside. So maybe more like March, April. Start your seeds indoors, and then you'll have small transplants you can move outside. Otherwise, just prepare an area in the garden. You know, you're just increasing your success starting them inside. But if you've got a space, you can keep an eye on them, maybe protect them from birds and animals digging them and see what comes up. It's a friend of mine who's passed away has introduced a bunch of different hostas that he shared with friends that he would select out for different variegation and different growth habits. So it'd be a fun experiment to see what you get from your seeds.
Yeah, good luck, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Carl wondered, how do you propagate rosemary, or can you do it?
Well, first of all, keeping it alive is the first challenge for most of us. And then there's probably those people out there going, well, it's easy, Melinda. I would do a leaf stem cutting with that. And if you can, from the tender growth, not the woody part, so that newer growth, that's a great way to do it. I always like to make my cuttings above a set of leaves, so whatever's left looks good. It's one that's fairly easy to root if it's a healthy plant. I just find for winter, finding the right spot, good bright location, cooler temperatures, and a place you'll remember to water if you've had trouble overwintering your plants. It sounds like he's got no problem overwintering because enough plant growing to propagate. So leaf stem cuttings would work great for that.
Melinda Myers, our guest today, nationally known gardening expert, number of great books, including one of my favorites, her Midwest gardening book. And you can join in with your questions. You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Tyler Ditter's our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Melinda Myers. Always great to have her come by and talk about what's going on either inside or outside when it comes to plants, and you can join in. Well, lines are filled right now, but email to ideas@wpr.org. Phyllis in Madison, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I have snake plants at Sansevieria, and I got them when they were already quite large, and they've been moved and all, and they're falling over. They don't grow up straight. The new shoots come up straight, but the others are really getting bad, and I tried to make little fences to hold them, but it hasn't worked very well. I wonder if there's a product out there you can buy, a nice, sturdy, good-looking fence to put around it.
One thing about snake plants, they're touted as being shade tolerant, and they will tolerate low light, but they really prefer good, bright, sunny conditions. And in fact, they'll even bloom for you if they're grown in a sunny window. And those stems tend to be stiffer and sturdier. And you're right. You know, I've got some in an east-facing window. They're doing pretty good, but the older leaves tend to be a little floppy. I have not seen any pots with built-in supports. I bet some of your listeners, Larry, may have some suggestions for us. I love to be creative and do some of my own things. I've used everything from long skewers and then just use some decorative, either twine or something good and long. One of the problems is your stake, you know, having a good heavy pot, because those snake plants tend to be pot top heavy, and then you add the stakes and everything goes tumbling over. There are plastic pots that some plants come in with built-in trellises. Unfortunately, they're usually pretty short, and they're just for smaller house plants. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Larry.
No.
I haven't really seen any.
I haven't either.
Any good? Sorry. Somebody, Phyllis, I bet will chime in and let us know if there's something cool out there.
Phyllis, I hope you go to the Garden and Landscape Expo.
Oh, you know what? That's a great point. And I see you're going to be there, and I will too. And they always have cool products that we just have to try.
That is the most fun place to go. What is it? February 10th through the 12th. You're there. You're there for quite a bit. You're giving quite a few talks. If I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I'm there every day, and I have a booth, too, so people can stop by and say hello.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I will be there with Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston. We'll be doing something Saturday morning at 9:30.
It's fun. And so it's a great way. Good lectures. Well, I'm going to put a plug in. It's one of my favorite places, too. And I always joke that having a booth there keeps me from spending too much money. However, I do find time to shop and try to sneak in on a few lectures as well, because there's plenty to learn from all the experts there.
Absolutely. The 10th through the 12th in Madison. Well, Dick in Cumberland will give you a chance. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've got a problem trying to get a trumpet vine to grow on the back side of my property. Years ago, I had it on the west side of my house, so it only got the sun when it was dipping in the west, of course. And it was 8 feet tall, had hundreds of blossoms, and hummingbirds were all over it. So when we added onto the house, I bought another hummingbird or trumpet vine, and I stuck it in back of our house on top of the edge of a hill. And it has plenty of sun exposure in the morning. Well, throughout the day, it does have shade to the north, however. I guess east-west sun and southerly sun. I just can't get that thing to blossom, and I can't get it to grow over 3-4 feet tall.
So how long has it been in that spot?
It's been there about 4 or 5 years now, if not a little bit longer, Linda.
And then is your soil heavy clay? Is it sandy, rocky? What's your soil type?
Oh, gracious. It's not the best. It's probably got a good 6 inches of topsoil, but after that, it's probably rock and some clay.
Okay. Trumpet vine really do like a sparse diet, so to speak. Sometimes they fail to bloom for two reasons. One, they're not mature enough, and sometimes it can take 5 to 7 years before they reach maturity to start flowering. Too much fertilizer can limit its growth as well. So you're kind of, the fact your plant hasn't taken off, do you think there's any, you know, it sounds like it's on a hill, so have you been able to initially make sure that it had sufficient water during extended dry periods? You know, 4 years old, it should be pretty good on its own.
I haven't done anything to specifically water it myself. I'm just kind of letting nature do its thing, and that seemed to work for the other one, so I thought, well, we'll see what happens here, but I'm just not getting blossoms.
Yeah, I think part of it might be the maturity. How are you doing? And so it sounds like you're probably not fertilizing it either, which is okay.
Yeah.
What gets put on the lawn there is lawn fertilizer, and that's it.
Okay. So has it got grass growing right up to it, or is it a mulch bed around it?
No, it has grass growing up to it.
Here's what I would suggest you do. Grass is a big competitor for plants. And so if you're fertilizing your lawn, you're also getting some fertilizer to the plant. If you can create a mulch bed around that plant, you know, even just a couple of feet, it'll make it easier to mow. The bigger the mulch bed, the better for the plant. So whatever you can tolerate, it'll make it easier to mow. But I think you'll see a big increase in growth. When I was teaching at MATC, we had a catalpa tree, and my students used to laugh. They called it a bush because it was very stunted. We extended that mulch bed in the summer of 1995. It was really a hot, dry summer. That tree put on several feet of growth. Huh. Nobody was watering it, but just by taking the grass away.
Yeah, their grass drinks a lot of water.
Right. Big competitor. So I would start with that, Dick, and then it sounds like the plant's getting plenty of nutrients from your lawn fertilizer, and so you want to also keep that fertilizer away from the plant. So by doing the mulch bed, that will help too. I would try that initially. I think you're going to see a big improvement in growth. And then also another year, hopefully this year, it'll be closer to being mature and start flowering for you.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Dick. Appreciate it. Richard in New Berlin, we'll go to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 5-foot-tall Dieffenbachia plant that I had propagated from a shoot. And I feed it cold coffee, and it seems to grow like crazy. Am I doing right, or am I doing wrong? And should I use coffee for other houseplants?
Yeah, you know, coffee is one of those things. There's an article out of, I think it's Washington State, Linda Chalker Scott, Washington State. She talks a lot about coffee grounds and using them, and they're great organic matter. There are a few plants that it's allelopathic, meaning it's toxic to them, lettuce seedlings, but most plants can tolerate it. And one of my things about gardening, if it's safe for you, the plant, and the environment, and it's working for you, just keep doing it. And it's a free source, not high in nutrients, which is okay, because most of our house plants, we tend to overdo. You know, something like Larry's lime tree, it's flowering and fruiting, and so it needs more nutrients than, say, your Dieffenbachia that's just putting out leaves and creating its own energy through photosynthesis. So the coffee grounds, if it's working and your plant looks good, I'd keep it up. And you could always add some dilute houseplant fertilizer if you ever think it needs a nutrient boost. But if the leaves are full size, the plant's putting on the amount of growth you want, it sounds like it's getting what it needs.
Yes. Don't change.
Don't mess with what's working, right?
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it. Robert in Chicago. We'll go to you. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I planted an avocado seed a couple years ago, and it sprouted up, and it's about 3 feet tall. And then last year I planted one to keep it company right next to it, and it's probably about 8 inches tall. Is it a possibility I can get avocados off this tree in X amount of time?
You know, a year ago I would have said probably no way. And then I had someone, my insurance man's wife, sent me a picture of her avocado with avocados on it.
Oh.
So that's the only person I've ever met.
I've never heard of it.
I haven't either, and I put it in my newsletter. Maybe I'll put it in this month. We haven't finished this month's newsletter. Maybe, Robert, I'll put it back in to inspire you. She just grows it out in the summer, in the winter. You know, I did a lot of research, and, you know, you can't get avocados. You can't get them to do it inside. And she sent me a picture, and hers is, you know, sometimes I remember when I was an undergraduate at Ohio State University, my professor said, sometimes the plants don't read the book.
Yep.
They do, you know. So, Robert, I think, you know, you have nothing to lose. You have a cool plant that's a beautiful addition to your house. And if it does fruit for you, I think her plant was only like 8 years old, or I should say only. But if it produces fruit in a few years, be sure to send Larry and I pictures, because we'd love to add you to that. Two people in Wisconsin who got avocados.
Thanks, Rob. Yes, definitely hang on to that plant and save photos for sure. Oh, boy. Gloria in Waukesha, we go to you. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. My husband has been growing canna lilies for over 50 years, and he stores them in vermiculite. This year, they grew to about 6 feet tall.
Wow.
And in the basement, in the vermiculite, one of them is 2 feet tall.
Mm.
Also, they sprouted early. Is that what you're saying? So normal, he's keeping them dormant for the winter,
yes.
And so one has sprouted already?
Yes.
And what do you do now?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. This crazy weather we've had, besides impacting our outdoor plants, sometimes the areas where we're storing our plants, if it's warmer outside, it's going to be warmer inside in the basement or wherever. And so those non-hardy bulbs, cannas, dahlias, things we've got stored, Gloria, this is a good reminder to anybody overwintering them, like in their basement, is to check on them. I had luck. I've had, just because I wanted to try it, I brought a canna inside for the winter and left it in a pot and grew it like a house plant in a sunny window. It struggled through the winter, but then when I put it back outside, it was fine. So he may want to take that one, because if it's 2 feet tall already, it's starting to grow. If you've got a sunny window, if he could pot it up, put it in a container, pot it up, just try to keep it alive until he can move it outside. Otherwise, I'm worried if he cuts off the leaves and tries to keep it dormant, it may have used up too much energy and may not have enough to make it through. So if you've got a spot to grow it like a house plant, add a little greenery. I think that might be his best luck.
I think that's right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Gloria. Sherry in Clinton, it's your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. I have planted two magnolia trees. One of them I got from Rotary Gardens, and it's a wedding ring. It's gorgeous. It's got spectacular flowers. The other one was given to me by a neighbor, and so I don't know the variety, but I planted it just a year after the other one, and it's never bloomed.
A couple things to keep in mind. Some of our magnolias bloom pretty early, and the flower buds can be damaged by a late-season frost. Do you notice the flower buds are much larger, than the leaf buds on a magnolia? Have you noticed if your tree, the non-flowering one, has produced any flower buds at all?
I have not seen any, no.
Okay. The other thing is, I'm wondering if it was a seedling or if it was propagated by a cutting, if it was a much younger plant than your magnolia, the wedding ring that you bought, it may need to get a little larger and more mature. Growing conditions the same for both of those, pretty much?
Pretty much. One is in the terrace, which is sunnier. One is a little closer to the house, but not real close.
Okay, so both of them getting at least 6 to 8 hours of sunlight a day?
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, and the one that's not blooming, the leaves are good size, deep green, look healthy?
Gorgeous. It has beautiful shape and lovely foliage. But I've never noticed buds on it, and I noticed the ones on the other one right away.
One of the things you might want to try is... just to disclose, I do work with Milorganite. I do like it, but one of the reasons I like recommending it for plants like yours that's failing to flower is it has non-leaching phosphorus. And what the research has found is when the microorganisms work on releasing the nutrients from the pellets, it releases some of the phosphorus and potassium bound to our soil, making it available for plants. And phosphorus promotes flowering. And so one application in the spring, you don't need to necessarily do it every year, but that might boost it, kick it into flowering for you for some reason. just like people, plants can be different in terms of the age for flowering, their response to the environment. But you might want to do that. And again, making sure that you have a bed of mulch or a perennial ground cover or something that's not competing for water and nutrients from that plant. Because just keeping grass away from trees, especially young ones, really is going to reduce the competition and boost growth and flowering. So it sounds like it's healthy, and that shot of mullorganite will just help you maybe nudge it into bloom. So you might want to try that this spring. It sounds like everything else is the same, so just maybe patience and maybe a little mullorganite to get it to flower.
There you go, Sherry. Thank you so much for calling. Jody in Brooklyn, your turn. Hi, Jody.
Hi there. My question to you folks is, I have a kangaroo paw fern that has been in the same pot for probably 7 to 8 years, and it has these loops and things growing from it. I'd like to repot it, but I'm afraid I'll kill it.
Oh, I know. I love that plant. There's a garden center near me that has some, and every time I go to buy something for a workshop, I'm like, oh, but I don't need another plant. And it is scary because those rhizomes are hairy, right? And so they grasp the pot. And so you're right. So basically carefully sliding it out, and then you could even possibly soak those to loosen them up. That might help. Get maybe an extra set of hands in there so that you can carefully kind of direct them over. You're only going to go about an inch bigger in diameter in the size of the container, and just try to maneuver as carefully as possible. The good news is it's sad to break those rhizomes because that gives it such a neat look and the reason for the name. But, it won't kill the plant. It shouldn't kill the plant. The key is just one size bigger in diameter, though, for any house plant, because if we go too big, the potting mix holds the moisture longer, increases the risk of rot. So I feel your pain because I was looking at those two going, oh, man. So good luck with that, Jody. I'm sure it'll be fine for you.
Thanks very much for calling, Jody. Appreciate it. Melinda Myers, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert, TV, radio host, author, and columnist. Got a great website, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. We've talked propagating plants. We've talked all kinds of things, actually, relating to plants. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Melinda, I always like going to your website, and it's melindamyers.com, and I want to always stick an extra E in there.
You know that you're not the only one. When I worked for Milwaukee City Forester, my boss was Dick Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. And so he got my S and I got his extra E. So,
so it's M-Y-E-R.
Yeah.
S.com. So, and you have, you get lots of visits to that, don't you?
We do. So it's a great way. It's a wonderful way to stay in touch, share what I've learned along the way, whether it's working professionally from other professionals, from gardeners. You know, I know we all learn so much when we visit with each other, and gardeners love to share plants and seeds and ideas and tips and techniques. And so I try to make sure that we can try to get some information to help people have fun and be successful on the way, and some pretty pictures to inspire you and just kind of get us through our long winter as well. I did want to mention, I think it was Tammy that called about starting the Dutchman's pipe from seed, and I missed my opportunity to talk about a much easier way is do layering for vines.
Mm-hmm.
So things like the Dutchman's pipe vine or clematis or things like that, or even indoor plants, vining indoor plants. And basically, layering is just about 9 inches from the tip, cut the stem halfway, treat it with a rooting hormone, bury that part in soil. Now, in the garden, you could bury it right near the plant, or you could put it in a pot. And then once it's rooted, disconnect it from the parent plant. You've got a rooted plant to go put wherever you want. It's just a fun way. Spider plants make it really easy, right? There's the little plantlet already on the end. And when you're out in the garden weeding, you may find some of your shrubs. I've had forsythias and things where the stems are laying on the ground and they root right on their own, and so you can disconnect it, and you got a rooted plant already. So layering's a fun thing to do for house plants and your outdoor vines, and much easier for some plants like the Dutchman's pipe.
And I did want to mention some webinars that you have as well, because I think those are always fun, and you've got some that are coming up relatively quickly.
You bet. So on my website, as you mentioned, melindamyers.com, we've got lots of them. So I'm kicking off with houseplants doing indoor container gardens. So we think about designing house, you know, our container gardens. Well, now we can think about doing it indoors. And that one is February 8th. And then on the 15th, I'm doing dahlias, so successful ways to grow, 10 tips for growing healthy dahlias. Dahlias are one of the most popular Pinterest flowers, and can't be a little intimidating. When I started my career, I remember people were, you know, the Dahlia Society and all this great stuff, and then people got tired of saving them, and now they're so affordable and easy to grow that you can start them as annuals, so you can buy new ones or save them over winter. So we'll share some tips. And then dealing with growing a healthy water garden on the 22nd and working on keeping invasive plants away. And so those are just a few of the things coming up. They're all free, thanks to my sponsors, and they're all recorded. So if you can't come to the live broadcast, then you can listen to the recording at your convenience. And just trying to help us get the information out so everyone can have fun. And Larry, the fun thing that I found with the webinars is in the chat, this whole community of gardeners started, you know,
because
it's almost not as good as radio or in person, but, you know, people sharing, oh, here's a link to this, or I've had success growing this, and I'm from here. And so there's gardeners from all over sharing tips as I'm going through and answering questions. So it's been a fun, you know, if there was any good outcome of the whole COVID thing, it nudged me into doing webinars. So.
Well, lots of them. And, of course, just go to melindamyers.com, and there's all the information. And Betty in Dodgeville has a question for you, so let's go there. Betty, hi.
Hi. I have this beautiful bay laurel that I got at the farmer's market, I don't know, years ago, and it's gotten so huge. So I've been trying to take cuttings of it, and I've tried everything, and nothing seems to work. I've done hormone.
Timing is an issue. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. And, well, first of all, congratulations, because bay plants are very susceptible to scale. So I've got one growing in, I hope, the right spot now. I've lost a couple to scale insects. I'm confessing my, bad habits here, but mine's doing well. But they're woody plants, and so that can be challenging. What I would try to do, Betty, is as it's putting on new tender growth, take your cuttings from that. I don't know if you've tried, before, because they get pretty woody pretty quick. And then if you could take just a short cutting, like 2 to 3 inches, remove the lower leaf. It sounds like you're doing everything right. And timing, especially for plants that tend to form those woody stems, even though we grow them as indoor plants, timing can greatly influence rooting success. So I would try this spring, as you're getting that burst of new growth coming, as the days are longer, light intensities, you're seeing lots of new growth, try taking cuttings then. That might increase your success.
And thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Let's look at a couple of emails here. Have we talked about Josh email looking for advice for propagating dragon palms? He's had very little success.
One of the things I've had, very, very challenging. So seeds from palms, one, we usually don't have success with having seeds form and reaching maturity to start them from that. Cuttings, you're talking about larger stems. I've had success doing some air layering with palms. And that's basically on the stem, you cut it halfway through, wedge it open, put some rooting hormone pack in, some moist sphagnum moss, wrap some plastic, and a month or two, you get roots in a plant and then sprouting from below. And he was saying it was his dragon palm.
Yeah.
I'm trying to cheat here, Larry, and pull up a dragon palm to see if, because I have not grown that one, and I want to make sure.
I haven't either. Talking.
Oh, okay. Some people call it a Madagascar dragon tree. So we may be talking about, you may be talking about, and that's where common names are a challenge. So if it is the, some people call it a, it's a type of dracaena. It could be a palm. It could be a dracaena. What I'm seeing when I pull this up is a dracaena, often called dragon palm. So if it's a dracaena, they have kind of that woody stem. Again, taking a shorter cutting from the top, if in fact it's this. But I've also used air layering with this. And so what will happen where you remove, so you do the air layer, you cut it off after it roots. The part left behind will usually put out two sprouts, so you have two stems coming from that area. If you want, if it's a long bare stem and you're trying to get leaves lower, sometimes what I'll do is air layer it, then cut back closer to the pot and get the branching to occur lower. So if you're calling a dracaena a dragon tree palm, which some people do, I see, you could try air layering. You could try shorter cuttings if you haven't done that before. You could also try, some people will do stem cuttings, and so if you air layered it and you have a bare section of stem, you could remove that, cut it into 2 to 3 inch lengths. This works great with Diefenbachias as well. Bury them halfway, and then you'll get where the nodes occurred, a new plant growing. But that's another one that takes like a month or two. So, Josh, I would try cuttings from shorter cuttings near the tip or try air layering. And there's some good information. We did a video on air layering for Melinda's Garden Moments. It's housed on my website, too. You could check that out. But that might be a way to propagate a new plant while maintaining the old plant as well.
And let's take a call from Stuart in Menominee. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. I have tons of orchids that I have, and I can get them to bloom regularly using sort of like a cold shock treatment on them to get them to throw their blooms. But I have yet to be able to figure out how to propagate an actual plant, and I wanted to know if there was any advice on that.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of our orchids are tissue cultured is how they, and that's why they've really come down in price, because they've really gone to doing that tissue culturing. Are you doing the Phalaenopsis, the moth orchids? Is that mainly what you're growing?
Those Phalaenopsis, some Cymbidium, just different varieties.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, if you, boy, I'm not sure there's an easy, I have not, you know.
There's not an easy way.
No, exactly. So I am going to suggest, this is where I know my limitations. So sorry, Stuart, I am not going to be able to help you. I'm not sure. I think the orchid folks sometimes are at the expo. So that would be the place to talk to them. You're in Menominee Falls. I know the Wisconsin Orchid Society in the past has met at the domes, and sometimes we'll do a show, and they would be a good place. I am going to do a little research for you, Stuart, and I'm going to send what I find. I'm going to see if I can get some info for you. I will send it over to Larry and Jill. So, and I will also put something in one of my upcoming articles for the Journal Sentinel, but I need to do a little research. So let me see if I can talk to some experts that can help us both out.
There you go, Stuart. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Liz in Middleton, what's on your mind?
Yes, I was just noting that I've given a number of amaryllis bulbs to friends, and they're from Canada, and they say waterless, and they're beautiful. They just keep blooming and blooming. I'm just wondering, what do they do with the bulbs? What do we do with the bulbs afterwards? Can we plant them outside, or do we just pitch them? And I've never had a waterless amaryllis bulb before, but
and we only have about 45 seconds or so to answer that.
And if it's the wax type of bulb, you don't need soil, you don't need water, and they grow. They're just amazing. If you want to keep them blooming year after year, you will need to eventually pot them up. But those waxless amaryllis are amazing.
So there you go. Just pot them up and keep them, Liz. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host, author, and columnist, our guest today for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to have back Melinda Myers with us, nationally known gardening expert, TV radio host, author, columnist, has some great books. And I hope you'll join in with your questions as we move along today. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Just to mention, there was some talk about orchids and so forth, and the Orchid Show is coming on February 4th and 5th to Olbrich Gardens.
Oh, excellent.
And there are going to be lots of orchid experts there as well, and that's always a really nice show. So it's the 4th and the 5th in Madison at Olbrich Gardens. So,
and it's worth the drive, Stuart, from Menominee Falls. It's worth the drive. They have the conservatory. If you haven't been there,
you get
a little breath of...
Just in there about a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago now. It was such a nice respite.
and we do have a lot of plant experts. You know, when I'm working at the State Fair, I always go to, I think it's now the Grand Champion building. It used to be the Horticulture building, and you can talk to Ichabod experts and, you know, bonsai experts and, you know, people that have been doing it for decades and have a lot of great experience that I always pick their brains when I have a chance because I always learn so much. So thank you for that. Definitely worth a trip, even if you're not local, to visit Olbrich. It's a beautiful garden and definitely worth visiting several times a year.
Lynn emailed. She has two smaller fiddle leaf figs in a pot. What's the best way to propagate them?
Well, you know, a lot of people are trying to grow their fiddle leaf figs into larger plants. This is one, too, with their stouter stems that you might want to try air layering. I've got one I'm air layering right now in my shop area, and pretty successful that way. Cuttings, you may have success, again, from the growing tip. You have two of them in a pot, so I'm wondering if you're thinking that you need to divide them and separate them, so you have one plant per container. You can do that as well if you're worried about it being crowded. But again, you're going to be, you know, where you make your cut to take that cutting, you're going to encourage branching. So, you know, if it's up, you know, 2 feet above where you make that cut, you're going to have two branches come out typically. So I've done some large rubber plants that I've taken cuttings and had success rooting and then, you know, encouraging branching down lower. One thing, too, to do, sometimes people want to propagate air layering as a way to handle plants that are bare on the bottom to encourage, you know, if you want to get leaves from top to bottom, cutting it back, as I mentioned, above the pot so the branching occurs lower. But even pinching out the growing tip of something like a fiddle leaf fig or rubber tree by that new leaf as it's starting to unfold removes a growth hormone called auxin. And by doing that, that encourages branching and new leaves to form lower on the plant. So sometimes that's just another way to kind of improve the look of your existing plant if you're not looking to make more, but just improve its appearance.
Let's take a call from May in Jackson. May, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, yes. I'm calling because I have mulch around my entire home, and my problem is that I have thistle weeds that grow in abundance everywhere. All I do is pull them out, and I'm wondering if there's any natural, effective ways for me to get ahead of the thistles so that my flower garden can thrive.
Do you know what kind of thistles there are? Are they Canada thistles?
Canada thistles and some bull thistle, but mostly Canada.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I had somebody come. I had a, you know, thistles love it hot and dry, so they've been doing well. The goldfinches love the seeds. I'm trying to find reasons. You know, you do need. They are considered noxious weeds too. We need to control. Obviously, non-chemically pulling them, you may want to try. There are some products that use plant oils and soaps. It won't kill the roots. It just burns the tops. So it's one that you don't want it to hit your desirable plants because you could damage those, and you'd need to do it repeatedly to try to keep them under control. I wouldn't want to use, you know, a propane weed, you know, killer yeah. by your house in a wood mulch, but you may want to try that. Even a Dutch hoe that you could slide underneath the mulch to cut through the plant and eventually starve it to death. So the options are continually pulling and digging. And believe me, May, the weeds are winning in my yard. You know, the Dutch hoe might be a way to, at least it's got a long handle so you can stand up. It's very sharp, so you need to be careful not to take out your good plants. And then the organic products, there's some that use, Burnout uses a clove oil. It smells really good. There's a few others that use soaps at a very high concentration. And so they just burn the tops. They don't kill the roots. So you'll have to do it repeatedly. But those would be my only organic suggestions that I would have.
Yeah, Canada thistles are the worst
to
get rid of. Yeah, for sure. Well, May, that's it.
Good luck. And,
good luck.
You know, think about the calories you're burning. You can have that extra cookie for dessert or something, right?
Oh, thanks again. Linda and Madison, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a Norfolk pine, which is about 5.5 feet tall and wide. And it started bending over and...
leaning out of the pot a bit, huh?
And to the point now where it's just completely bent over, and I tried just putting a stake in the pot, but the soil won't hold it up.
You may the good news is, what size of pot is it in? Would you diameter wise, kind of a guesstimate? 12 inches.
More than 12 inches, I think. Maybe 12 inches or more.
The reason I was asking is there are some containers more designed for outdoor gardens that have built-in trellises, things for growing, you know, vines outside or tomato plants that are sturdy, that you might be able to find a container with a built-in trellis system. You might be able to take an obelisk designed for outdoors that has multiple legs so that you can, you know, open on the top, like more like a tomato towery kind of thing, but prettier. That would give you support all the way around. You may want to use several different stakes so that, and push them down as far into the soil so that the weight's more evenly distributed. You might want to go online and then just see what kind of pots with built-in supports. You know, I didn't have a good suggestion for a small snake plant, but for something the size you're dealing with, you might be able to find a larger container that would have something like that. Is it getting good bright light, and are you able, before it was laying on the ground, turn it so it's evenly distributed?
Well, I used to, but I moved in June, and I don't have room in my apartment because it's small. The rooms are small, and so I have to give it away, but I feel like I can't give it away until right now. It's just leaning against the wall and not, you know, some of the little leaflet things are coming off that are
right
against the wall. And
you might be willing to find a gardener that is willing to give a little. I meet gardeners that are struggling to find a good home for plant, and I meet a lot of gardeners who love to take challenges like this in. You might want to put the word out to your gardening friends and family that you've got this plant that needs a better home just because you don't have the space and the light. And you may be surprised that you can find someone that may be able to take it as is so that they can develop the solution that works for them. That would be my first try.
Or put something in your neighborhood association website, too. That will get almost.
That's a great idea. I'll tell you, there are lots of people out there that I think you'll be amazed. You'll probably make a gardening friend and have someone that can give it a home with better light than you can provide. You know, sometimes our plants outgrow our homes. And so that's a great idea, Larry. Get the word out. And I bet you'll find somebody. You might want to try that first before you invest a lot of money and then they end up going, well, I don't like that pot. It doesn't match my decor. And,
yeah,
you know, they may be willing to spend the dollars and set it up that it works for them.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay actually has something relating, I think, to forming a trellis plant in a pot. Let's go there. Stella?
Hi. Well, this would be for somebody who wants to keep the pot, but
okay.
Living in Door County, we have many, many, many potters up here in the county. So I would suggest if you know a potter, go to them and see if you can commission a custom-made pot that would have maybe like supports for like little slots or little loops to put trellis poles through. Or, you could design whatever the potter feels that he or she can make.
That's a nice idea.
With them.
Yeah, it's a nice idea. And potters, I know the ones in Door County and can do a pretty good job with their pots. I like
and
that
I
idea.
Think that is a great idea. And you might be opening up some business opportunities for them, too. And I know there's quite a few in the Cambridge area, too. So that's an excellent idea. Thank you, Stella. This is why I love any time I get to visit with you, Larry, and your listeners. I always walk away with some new ideas.
Thank you, Stella. On to Rose in Menominee Falls. Hi, Rose.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. I had purchased a false Aurelia plant many years ago. It was approximately 3 feet tall in a pot. And I loved it for the leaves on it. My friends told me it looked like marijuana leaves.
Yes. But,
so that was the description. And it grew and grew and grew. And I couldn't keep it in the same spot. So the only spot I had for it was tucked kind of behind a tall chest. It didn't get nearly as much light. But this plant morphed into a totally different plant. It kept growing. It developed like a tree trunk with a canopy of leaves on the top that were like oblong, long leaves, nothing like the leaves I had before.
Wow. Wow.
Pretty cool.
Okay. And I know that is a Ming Aurelia plant from your description, it sounds like it. And those are very cool plants. They like high humidity. They often lose their lower leaves. I have never seen the leaf shape morph. But if you think about it, if the light is much lower, by having a broader leaf, there's more surface area to collect the light. And so perhaps it was just either changing in growth characteristic to be able to capture what light was available, or there could have been a mutation. Plants can mutate because of environmental reasons and stresses. That's one way they adapt to changes. So, Rose, I have not heard of that, but mutations occur. That's how we got, ruby red grapefruit and some of the other things that, we had mutations happen on plants. So thanks for sharing it. So it sounds like even though it's not as ideal of a growing spot, the plant has adapted, doing great, and decided to change things up for you. How cool. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, I love that story, Rose. Thanks. Well, let's go to Mary in North Lake. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the call, and hi, Melinda.
Hi.
Just something for the person who had thistles, and I don't know how big of a thistle, but anyway, in spring when the frost goes out of the ground completely, if you have a nice leather glove, get to the base of that thistle and pull it, a lot of times you can pull the old root right out, and it won't come back many times. But, of course, cut the seed heads off whenever you see seed heads, and that should help.
Well, you know, thank you, Mary, for that tip. And a lot of it depends on the type of thistle, perennial or an annual, but that's a great point. If you get any weed early in the season, so very, very good tip, Mary, any weed early in the season, especially moist soil, it's going to be easier to pull. You hopefully, you know, prevent it from flowering so you don't get the zillions of seeds and more plants to pull in the future. So thank you for sharing that, Mary.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate it. Eliza emailed, she has a very old jade plant, over 50 years old.
Wow.
Mother gave it to her, but the last 3 years it keeps looking worse, and this winter she tried to leave it be and didn't water it, and then a branch started dying off, and now it's very droopy. She gave it a few ice cubes, but no, she shouldn't water it too much.
You know, that's always the challenge because it depends on how hot you keep your house, how much light your plant receives in terms of watering. And she's right, Eliza, you're right. Less water in the winter, but not total drought all winter. You don't want it to totally dry up. I used to always say, you know, the challenge of trying to diagnose plant problems is the patient doesn't speak and it's already half buried, right?
Yeah.
So you might want to get someone to help you because if it's 50 years old, it's probably pretty big and pretty heavy, and slide it out of the pot and see what's going on with the roots. You know, if they're dry and crispy, it might be time to boost your watering. You know, you may want to water thoroughly, but less often. You know, check it every couple of weeks. And it may be every 3 or 4 weeks, depending. My cacti and succulents are in some pretty bright light. We keep our house kind of cool. But I usually find every 2 or 3 weeks I need to give them a good blast of water. For me, in my house, that works. You may, if the roots are slimy, you may need to trim off anything that's slimy and rotten, then put it in a container just slightly bigger than what's remaining. I think I'd see what's happening underground, and that will help guide you in terms of how you need to adapt your care. You may have just let it go a little too long between watering. Cooler temperatures, slightly drier soil, good bright light are a good way to not only get our cacti and succulents through the winter, but also often will encourage them to bloom in the spring.
Here's an interesting email from Kathy in Weyerhaeuser. She emailed, for the last 2 years, she has planted cabbage cores in pots, and they send out leaves all winter, and last year it put out flowers.
Oh, that is great. Well, cabbage are biennial, so, you know, they die outside in the winter. I have never tried cabbage cores, so I'm going to have to try that. Kitchen scrap gardening isn't going to be the way you're going to have a lot of produce to put up, but it's a fun way to try different things. And, Kathy, thank you for sharing that. So we're all going to have to try this
now. That is really cool. I've never heard that. I love it.
I haven't either. You know, I've had kale that makes it through the winter, and then it'll flower the second year because, you know, it can be biennial to perennial. So that's a great idea, Kathy. Thank you. I'm going to give that a try.
Annie emailed. She has a 35-year-old beefsteak begonia on life support. She's restored restarted from cuttings before, but this time the stems just rot. She repotted the dying plant into a smaller pot and will change the cutting water every week, like the internet recommends. She puts a little Miracle-Grow in the water, but doesn't have much hope.
I would, you know, and the other thing, Annie, is try. It sounds like you've had great success doing cuttings in water, and that's kind of goes with the if this works, keep doing it. But maybe try using vermiculite, moist vermiculite, or a potting mix instead with a couple of your cuttings and see if you have better success than doing it in water. I've done it both ways. You know, I've been in a hurry, and so I can get a glass of water and throw the cutting in there, and I tend to have better success putting it right in a potting mix, just because I tend to be in underwater, keep it moist, and find they root. So, you know, plants 35 years old is pretty old, too.
Yeah.
You know, it may be more of it's like done and less in terms of your, it sounds like you know what you're doing. So it might just be either adapting to it, try something different, and it may be time to just, it might be time to get a new plant, unfortunately.
Yeah. You mentioned grapefruit earlier, just in passing, and Bill in Green Bay emailed that he and his grandson experimented with grapefruit seeds. They planted two and have a beautiful, vibrant, green, two-foot-high plant. Bill transplants it every spring to a larger pot and leaves it outside during nice weather. He wonders if he should do anything else.
I think the same kind of care. It is in the citrus. It's the same kind of care. A lot of these plants, when we start them from seed, you're not sure what you're going to get. If it does eventually flower and fruit, so it could be a surprise, does usually take quite a few years to reach maturity. It sounds like it's going great. And how fun is that? Such great science lessons for our kids, helping them understand how plants grow, plus we're gardeners, so we like to try new things. So it sounds like you're doing it all great. If you haven't, if you want to try to nudge it into bloom, a flowering plant fertilizer, or do the Larry Mueller technique and use fishy mulch in year-round, that works well for Limey, for him. So that might be enough to give you that constant supply. But it sounds like it's going great, and it's just going to be a matter of time and a little bit of luck that that plant will eventually flower and fruit for you.
Yeah, that is very cool. So we both learned a couple of things here today on the show, though.
Well, it's always good to talk to your listeners and you, Larry. It's always fun.
Thank you so much, Melinda. I'll see you at the Garden Expo and hope sooner than that, maybe. You never know.
I hope so, too. You never know. Thanks so much, Larry. Thanks to all your listeners. Everyone, have a great rest of your day.
Melinda Myers. And go to melindamyers.com, by the way, and you'll learn some more about all of the events that she's going to be participating in and all the great information that's on that melindamyers.com website. And remember, Myers is M-Y-E-R-S. Join us on Monday at noon to celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Live from the Capitol Rotunda. It's Wisconsin's 42nd annual tribute and ceremony. Words and music, it's the nation's oldest official MLK state commemoration. So tune in Monday at noon here on Wisconsin Public Radio and online at WPR.org. And that, of course, means that our show will be a little shorter. We'll be going from 11 to 12 on Monday with our physical therapist. And they'll talk about keeping your hips healthy. What about that? That's Monday. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.